Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit, this fine Monday, January 9th, 2012. And here this morning, Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, weekly GovExec columnist, fellow seminar presenter and friend. Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, Bob.
All righty, and what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about countdown to retirement, kind of, sort of.
And
this might be a two-part series, may not be a two-part series, but let's have it.
We'll see how far we get down the list of things to do to prepare for retirement within the next 12 months.
Okay, so here we go. And this also could be for those of you all looking a year, two, three, four, five from retirement. It's not going to change. Laws certainly will change, but topics won't change. So Tammy had this really great outline. So let's start out. When do you know when it's time?
Well, there's two parts to that, because the first one would be, are you financially ready to retire? Which there are a lot of employees who I would say probably are more financially ready than they realize. But then there's also the other question of, are you mentally prepared for this transition in your life? And I think that's equally as difficult to determine. So I think it's when those two come together that you feel like I can afford it and I'm ready to do something new, then you know it's time to set a date.
Yes, and we've had Michael Creedon and some other folks on prior shows that can be accessed. All of our shows are available, podcast, or you can just listen to it on your computer, whether you're in the D.C. area or anywhere else in the world. And that's at NITPINC.com. NITPINC.com, left-hand side of the page. The first thing you'll notice is Tammy's GovExec articles, and last week she had an index, right? Now tell us about that index, because it got a lot of positive response.
Yeah, I've been writing that column called Retirement Planning for 6 years now on GovExec, so every year there's, you know, probably 40 to 50 different columns on different retirement planning topics. So what I do once a year, and it's always the first column of the year, is I go back through the previous years and weed out the ones that are no longer relevant and kind of categorize the ones that I'm still willing to share. And I make an index saying, here's the things dealing with survivor benefits, here's the ones dealing with Medicare. So they're a nice resource for employees who are planning for retirement, whether it's in the next 30 years or in the next 12 months. There's a lot of topics there you might want to peruse and get some information to help you plan.
Yes, and of course it's the best column in the country.
Well, it's got a good editor, too. I always have to give Tom Shoup a lot of credit, because he edits that column, and it makes it very readable, because I send him about 5 pages of draft, as you've seen my drafts, and he gets it down to something that's very worthwhile reading and doesn't take you more than 5 minutes to get through it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And I've learned a lot. Of course, I've learned a lot from you over the last 20-some years.
Equally on taxes from you.
Okay. All righty, so how do I know when it's time? And one of the comments was the psychological part, and that's hard for us to deal with. Mm-hmm. But on the benefit side, people talk about the high three, and let's just forget for a second that the lack of COLAs for the last couple of years. Let's assume that there's going to be a COLA, maybe not as robust as in the past, but there's going to be. How does one even calculate the high three?
Well, there's two components to your retirement benefit calculation, and one is the high three and the other one is your length of service. And you put the two together and you're going to get a percentage of replacement of your income. So when you're talking about the high three as the basis of your salary for the retirement calculation, you're not looking at your final salary, but you're looking at the average of your salary over the last 3 years of your career. It doesn't have to be the last 3 years, but for most employees, the highest 3 years ends up being the last 3 years. And with the 2 years of pay freeze that we've had in federal service right now, for many employees, their high three average is really not too much different than their final salary, because we haven't seen a big pay increase for most employees. Unless you had a promotion or a step increase, you wouldn't see too big of a difference. But then the other factor is that length of service, which really determines the percentage of how much of that high three you're going to get.
That's really important. Could I just ask you one baby question and then get into that tougher one, mm-hmm. length of service and some of the add-ons that might be there? When you talk about salary, is it the actual salary? Because many are on a salary, but others get hazard duty pay, mm-hmm. they get comp time, or is it just I'm a GS whatever at step whatever, and that's what the number is, even though I may have made more in
right.
a particular year.
Yeah, it's your retirement benefit, your high three average salary is based on your basic pay. And your basic pay is defined as anything that has retirement contributions withheld, which would be your GS 12 step 6 salary with locality pay adjusted, because the locality pay is part of your basic pay. But if you serve, like you said, if you serve overseas and you get danger pay or hazardous duty pay, or if you get a foreign language differential, you'll notice that out of your paycheck, they don't withhold the FERS or the CSRS retirement contribution. So therefore, you know that's not basic pay. You know, for some employees who might work a night shift or get a night differential, some employees that is basic pay and some it isn't. So again, it depends on whether or not they're withholding retirement from that salary amount. So just look at your biweekly paycheck. Look at the withholding on that leave and earnings statement for how much is being withheld for retirement, whether it's the 0.8% for FERS or the 7% for CSRS, and see if that matches up. And if you're having the full amount of your basic pay withheld for retirement, you know that's what's going to count for your high three.
And talking about that in class, by the time I get there, generally you're on the first day, they're still not certain when I talk about it, but from a tax perspective, we'll just leave alone for a while. They oftentimes confuse that withholding with the thrift, and they go, no, I have thrift. And I go, well, you also have this other thing. No, I don't. And somebody mm-hmm. in the class said, yes, you do. Mm-hmm. And FERS has a lot smaller percent than CSRS. And without class warfare, there's a reason for that. But mm-hmm. there is this, and it's not discretionary. It's mandatory. They take it from you.
What, the retirement contribution?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, with the way I always explain it in class, especially if I have a mixed group where we have civil service employees and the FERS employees in the same classroom, is I always tell the folks that the CSRS system was set up as a single benefit plan. So your retirement is your civil service retirement. In fact, that can provide as much as 80% replacement of your income. So if you work long enough, that's all you need. You don't have to have a dime in your thrift. You don't have to have a quarter of Social Security coverage. You could retire quite nicely on just a single civil service retirement benefit. But then you have the FERS employees who their system is not a single benefit plan. It wasn't designed that way. It's more like a corporate pension plan where you have Social Security as the base. You have an employer-sponsored savings plan, which is the thrift. And then you have a pension benefit, which is the FERS basic benefit. And you really need all three. So you might get 30% of your replacement income from the FERS basic benefits. You might get 30% from Social Security and maybe another 15-20% from the TSP. Now, those numbers can vary based on your length of service, the value of your salary. One of the things to know about Social Security is that it's a tilted system. So for somebody who works their career at low wages or lower wages, maybe working wages, they're going to get a higher replacement of income from their Social Security benefit, maybe as much as 40-45% replacement if they work long enough coming in from Social Security. So they wouldn't necessarily need to have 15 or 20% coming from the thrift. Whereas somebody else who might have spent their career at a GS 12, 13, 14, 15 level higher salary, their Social Security benefit might only replace 15 or 20% of their income. So they're going to be much more dependent on their retirement savings to supplement that basic pension benefit. So think of it as a seesaw. You know, the more Social Security you have, the less savings you'll need. But on the other hand, the less Social Security that your benefit represents, the more you're going to have in savings.
Okay. And we're here to take your calls. We're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. It's 10:15 a.m. Eastern Time. Monday, January 9th, 2012, we'll be on to 10:58 and a half, same day. Don't call after 10:58 this January 9th, 2012, but you can email us. We'll do the email later. Now, let me go back to what you said. So we got this three-legged proverbial stool under FERS. One is going to come, if I'm not mistaken, and that would be the FERS pension. if you will. That's coming, correct? Can one put that off and say, now I don't want it now, I want it later? Or it starts when the person retires?
Well, it depends on how much service you have and how old you are when you leave federal service. What we normally talk about is working in federal service long enough to retire. So you're old enough, you have enough service, you're going to retire at the end of the year, you get your first retirement check the next month. And that's how most people collect their annuities immediately. But if you were to resign, let's say you're only 42 years old and you want to go work someplace else outside the federal government, you may have enough service to be vested for a FERS pension, but you're not going to collect it at age 42. You might have to wait till you're 57 or maybe even 60 or 62 to start receiving it. So it's going to depend on whether or not you qualify for that immediate benefit. So if you have that full career of service, you know, 30 plus years, and you're over age 56 or 57, then you'll get an immediate benefit. But if you have a lot less service or if you're a lot younger, then you might want to postpone or defer receiving it.
So when you talk about young people retiring, somebody in law enforcement that might face mandatory retirement, or they do retire in their 40s, are they in the same kind of situation that it wouldn't start until they hit a certain age?
No, there are certain special, we call those special groups. We have law enforcement, firefighters, air traffic controllers who are subject to more liberalized benefits, and they do have mandatory separation. So for those employees, the minimum requirement is 20 years of service if they're 50, and then they would collect an immediate benefit. They wouldn't have to defer it or postpone it. They'd get it right away, and it would be a lifetime payment. Also, employees of any age in those special groups who have 25 years of service can begin collecting benefits even earlier than age 50 if they've got those 25 years in a position of law enforcement, firefighter, or air traffic controller.
Okay, so, but with regards to the other two of the three, the thrift certainly is available, as well as Social Security, but you can't really apply for Social Security until you're 62. Don't they have something in there they call a supplement between, say, an early retirement and age 62?
Yeah, with the FERS system, FERS was designed to allow someone to retire about the same time as you could have retired under CSRS. So to compensate for the fact that you can't collect Social Security till age 62, the FERS basic benefit, as we call it here, the FERS pension benefit, kind of loosely, that FERS basic benefit, is it going to include a supplement? We can sometimes refer to it as a FERS supplement. Some people call it a Social Security supplement, but it's meant to take the place of Social Security until you turn 62. So whether you're retiring under special provisions for law enforcement or whether you're retiring at age 57 with 32 years of service under just FERS, you get that extra supplement that's really meant to take the place of Social Security. And you'll receive that until you're 62, although there is an earnings limit. So if your idea of retirement is to go back to work, you might lose the supplement if you make too much money.
Okay, an interesting comment you made there. It's a supplement, but it's not paid by Social Security.
That's
comes
right.
Through on the OPM check, because I'll get questions in class. Well, Social Security in my state is not subject to income tax. And I go, well, this is not Social Security. You'll have to wait till you're 62.
Right.
And Social Security is also a preferred tax, taxable income.
Yeah, now, not only that, but the supplement also doesn't get a COLA. So if you start receiving that supplement when you're 57, it'll be the same amount when you're 62. So keep in mind, it's a level payment while you're receiving it.
Okay. Now, with regards to the thrift, I do this in class, and I think they'd rather hear it in class than they would otherwise. But if somebody does want to access the thrift, they can do it at any age, but they need to be careful because they could be penalized if they hit it actually before 55, which would also put them into 59 and a half. And we're going to have to take a pause here for a call.
Good morning.
Tammy, I have to tell you, I've enjoyed reading your articles for many years.
And I didn't pay you to call and say that, did I?
No, you did not.
Thank you very much.
Question for you. Mm-hmm. I started part-time as a student back in 81 and went full-time about a year later after graduating. I thought that I may have paid back that time or bought that time, but I only am finding rough handwritten notes that say, you know, my personnel told me to buy this time back.
Right.
So far, I haven't found the form or the confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be holding that confirmation? Like, would it be OPM, or who would have that if I did buy the time back?
Yeah, if you paid, we call that paying a deposit for service that wasn't subject to retirement contributions, and you would have paid that directly to OPM. So okay. the record of that payment is definitely with OPM. There could be a copy of it in your personnel folder, but that's not always going to be there. And of course, you may have the original buried in a box someplace in your attic, but, you know,
still looking, but haven't found it.
Haven't come across it. So you may want to talk to your human resource office, and they can make a contact with OPM to verify whether or not that's been paid.
Okay.
And then you'll know for sure, because it's something you want to take care of one way or the other, either make a decision to pay it or not pay it, but at least be aware of it before you retire so you know where you stand.
Right. At this point, if I find out that I have not paid it, because of the interest that would accrue on it, would it even be worthwhile to pay it?
Well, the good news is you're saying that that dates back to 1981, right?
Right.
And well, the good news is prior to October of 82, any service of that nature that we're going to count towards civil service retirement,
okay.
you don't even have to pay for it. It's going to count both for eligibility and calculation of your retirement benefit, even if you didn't pay it back. The only thing that'll happen is when you retire, if they say, well, let's say you owe $1,000 for that, mm-hmm. then your retirement's going to be reduced by 10% of what you owe. So if it's $1,000, you'd lose $100 a year off of your retirement. So it's not going to be a devastating effect one way or the other because of when it was and the fact that you're still under CSRS. Is that right?
Oh, yes.
Yes, okay. Yeah, so you're in good shape either way, but I think it'd be give you some peace of mind just to know if that's been taken care of, so you might want to
okay.
check with your HR office.
Yes, I just wasn't really quite sure mm-hmm. which way to check on that.
Yeah, and have you received a retirement estimate yet? Have you asked for one of those?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Did it indicate on there that it was paid or not paid, or didn't it?
No, it just indicated if you paid
for okay.
it.
So it gave you that information about here's how much you would have to pay and here's the reduction to your retirement.
Well, it just gave you the reduction. It didn't mm-hmm. say here's how much you have to pay.
Okay.
So it only gave you a little bit of the story.
Yeah, you might want to talk to that specialist who prepared the estimate and see if they can do a little more research for you to find out if that's been paid.
Okay, yeah. That, you know, that comes out of the Army Benefits Center because, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's all regionalized now.
Yeah,
it's all regionalized. We don't have those people anymore that to go to answer the questions. Or
yeah, there's good
the
and bad
questions.
To that. A lot of agencies now, whether it's Army, Navy, some of the other civilian agencies, have now regional centers, which the nice thing about that is they have people who are specialists who have been there for years who can mentor the newer people. But then the downside is you don't have that nice person down the hall that you can sit down with and just go to. So I guess we have to take the good with the bad with those regional centers.
And have you heard anything more lately on how delayed the actual retirement checks are? A friend of mine retired like 2 years ago, and she said for almost over a year mm-hmm. she was just getting estimated payments.
You could still run into that today, most definitely, because OPM still has a backlog of retirement cases. Last I heard, it was over 30,000 that are still in the process. But then on the other hand, you might get some that get pushed through pretty quickly. So there's no real rhyme or reason to it. You could have a 30-year career all with the same agency, and it could still take 8 months to process your claim. You might find that yours ends up with a claims examiner who's a lot quicker getting their work done, and you might get yours done in 3 or 4 months. So there's really no way to tell. I always just say prepare for the worst,
sure.
but, you know, expect the best. And hopefully it won't take as long as we've been saying in the past. But OPM is trying to get things moving along quicker. They've hired more people. They're trying to process claims a little more efficiently. But that still shows that we have a lot of people retiring, and the end of the year was a popular time. So I think those backlogs are going to continue for quite a while.
Tammy, mm-hmm. with regards to the backlog, mm-hmm. if somebody is in the backlog, do they get anything?
Yeah. So the nice thing is that when you retire, let's say somebody did leave December 31st, their first retirement check is due February 1st for the month of January. And it's very likely if the agency got them off the payroll on time and if everything got to OPM on time, they could get that first interim check on February 1st right on schedule. And OPM is trying to make those interim payments close to 90% of what you're expecting those regular checks to be. So you may not find too much of a hardship as long as that happens. But like I said, there's no guarantee that that's going to happen in that time frame because the agency can have a play in that. Whether or not your retirement was sent to OPM properly, you know, there's a lot of things that could cause a problem in there. So like I said, you know, hope for the best, but prepare for the worst.
One other comment, just the tax finance side mm-hmm. of me has to say this about the redeposit. If you don't have to make the redeposit, mm-hmm. but you could put a certain amount away, you being CSRS, assuming you don't owe any redeposits, which you don't, you might consider the voluntary contribution. for at least that or more. The voluntary contribution program allows you to put 10% of your federal lifetime earnings into an account. Or
but that would be
less.
One way for her to find out if she did pay it back or not. Because if she applies to make voluntary contributions, OPM wouldn't let her make any contributions unless that deposit had been paid. Are you familiar with that program?
No.
Okay, yeah. You need to listen because we spent an entire hour on this on July 11th. Please listen to our July 11th show.
Okay.
Again, it's NITPINC.com.
Right.
And just left-hand side, For Your Benefit Radio Show, click on and then look for the archive version. Now, because you are CSRS, you might listen to the entire show, but the voluntary contribution is really weighted towards the midpoint to the last part of the show.
Okay.
Yeah, that might be something she's interested in.
And it's a fantastic opportunity at a minimum to get a lot of money into an IRA, but potentially to get money into a Roth IRA directly.
That would kill two birds with one stone.
And that's totally different from the TSP and the TSP catch-up, right?
That's right.
100% different. No deduction, but 10% of your federal lifetime earnings, which most people don't have that kind of money sitting around wondering what to do with it, but it could be anything less than that.
Okay. One more quick question,
sure.
Please.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we at now as far as, quote, double dipping with Social Security? I'm actually not that many quarters short of being eligible for Social mm-hmm. Security, but if I retired and decided to get a job that would help me with my additional quarters, then is my federal retirement then reduced?
No. The here's the deal. Because let's say you have 32 credits, which means you're not qualified for Social Security and you're not going to get anything. But you retire from civil service and you get a job and you get those other 8 credits. So now you're fully insured. You have 40 credits, which mm-hmm. means you're going to get something, which is better than nothing, right? So if you go out and you work and you pay into Social Security and you qualify for a benefit, whatever you get, it is going to be reduced because of your civil service retirement, but that Social Security benefit will not reduce your civil service benefit. So you'll always receive your civil service annuity. That's not going to be affected by getting a Social Security check, but getting those 40 credits would give you another source of income. Although it may not be a huge source, it might be enough to pay for Medicare Part B with a little bit of money left over. So I would always encourage someone who has close to 40 credits to go ahead and finish up and get the remaining credits so that you get something to show for the taxes that you've already paid into Social Security.
Excellent.
And let me just make a comment here.
Since I mentioned taxes, he has to chime in.
Well, it is. Social Security actually is very tax-favored benefit. It generally is not taxable at the state level, and at most 85% taxable at the federal. But let's leave taxes aside just for a second. Now, as I grew up, quarters were always associated with calendar quarters. Mm-hmm. All right, but that went by the wayside, and Tammy very accurately calls them credits now. So in order to earn your additional 8 credits, you wouldn't have to work a full 2 years.
You'd have to earn about $5,000 to earn 4 credits.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. Okay,
right.
Just to make sure for you, certainly, but for listeners as well.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the standing joke, yeah, you could go, you know, work in the garden center at Walmart for a couple of months. And
you'd have it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Didn't say you had to work hard.
Well, thank you so much for calling. You asked some great questions. I'm sure other people benefited from it.
Well, thank you very much. And as I said, I've enjoyed your program, but I've definitely enjoyed reading your articles over the years. So please continue to keep them up.
Thank you. Thanks for joining the show.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. That's great. 202-465-3080. All righty. Next on Tammy's list is, can I retire? But can I afford to retire?
Right.
Now, how does anybody know that?
Well, I got an email the other day that got me thinking about that, because that comes up a lot in class, because being eligible to retire is one thing. You could be eligible to retire at age 62 with 5 years of service, but when you add up the value of that benefit, it's not going to be much money. So you got to make sure that you have enough income to cover your outgoing expenses. So you have to figure out, what is that FERS benefit worth? What's the civil service retirement if I have that? What's my Social Security? How much can I withdraw safely from the thrift plan without running out of money? And then decide if you can afford to retire. You know, so it's always a two-step process. It's understanding the benefits, knowing how much your retirement's going to be when you become eligible to receive it. But more importantly, it's making sure that that amount of income is going to be enough to allow you to have a comfortable lifestyle. And the good news is if it's not, there's something you can do about it. You can either continue to work a little longer, or maybe you could retire and start a second career or part-time career to help supplement what you have. So it's not the end all. But, you know, just keep in mind that sometimes, you know, just 20 or 22 years of service is not going to be enough to really afford a comfortable retirement.
Okay.
You have to do something else.
One quick comment. We have a caller.
Oh, great.
The quick comment here would be, can I afford? So we aren't addressing this comment to the people a year or two out. We're addressing this to as many as 20 years out.
That's right.
Don't start too late with this.
That's right.
And while
you can. For young employees, that TSP is the key.
All righty. So we got a caller. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Mike Alexander.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing? I talked to you once before. I want to ask a question. I'm getting ready to retire in 2 years. I'll be 60 years old. I would have 25 years of service. Heard you speaking about deferred or whatever it is. Is that good for me to retire for 25 years?
Well, that depends. That depends on what else you've got, because you got 25 years with the federal service, it sounds like. What do you have for the rest of your life? Were you in the military? Did you work in private industry? Did you have a 401k? Were you in school?
No, I worked in private sector for 15 years.
Okay.
And I know I could be Social Security.
All right, so when you're 60, you said 60 with 20-some years, 25 years?
Right.
Yeah, so you're going to be able to collect a supplement from FERS, but only on those 25 years you spent under FERS. And your FERS basic benefit is going to be about 25% of your high three. So you figure you got the supplement, which might be around $1,000 a month. You got this FERS benefit, which is about a fourth of your salary. Those two by themselves is probably not enough to afford to retire unless you're really going to change your lifestyle. So you're maybe better off to consider continuing to work till you're 62 or a little bit beyond that, depending on what other savings, investments you have, or whether or not you plan to work, you know, after you retire. So I would do some serious financial planning before you make that decision.
Okay. Now, what about, okay, I've been on my wife. She works for the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on her. I've been on my wife's payment for the hospital.
Health insurance? Uh-huh.
Yeah, I have never carried it.
That's okay. You're still considered covered. So do you have children that are still covered under your health plan?
Yeah, my daughter, she's still covered. She's 23.
Okay. Well, your wife can continue to cover self and family for you and your daughter and your whole family. But once your daughter turns 26 and she's off of the federal health plan, you and your wife at that point, even if you are retired, you could decide if you wanted to switch to two self-only plans that would allow you to pay maybe a slightly less premium for the health insurance. And then you could have Blue Cross and she could have Kaiser. So it also allows you to choose two different plans if you want to. So you would have that option because you would still meet the five-year test because you're covered under a federal health plan for the last 5 years of your federal career. So you'd even still have the option to pick it up.
Even though it's her?
Even though it's her, yeah. As long as it's federal health insurance, you're in good shape.
Okay. One other question.
Mm-hmm.
Forgot that quick. TSP is not your retirement, right?
I'm sorry, she has what?
TSP, is that your retirement? No.
TSP is your savings plan. Your retirement is the FERS benefit. So you have that plus the FERS benefit. TSP and FERS and Social Security, you have three things.
So who do I call to find out how much I would get when I retire?
Well,
I want to get out at 25.
Yeah, okay.
Well, let me just ask one question. Mm-hmm. Mike, are you in any kind of law enforcement or firefighter position?
No.
Okay, good, because that's a higher
amount. It'd be mandatory by now.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, the way you find out about the value of your benefits at your agency level, you have an HR office, your human resource office, and they can calculate and provide you with an estimate of your FERS retirement. That's going to be the one piece of your retirement. With Social Security, you either have received those statements in the mail from Social Security, or you can go to ssa.gov or socialsecurity.gov, and you can get an estimate of your Social Security retirement there, but that's not going to be until 62. And
right.
Then for TSP, on the Thrift Savings Plan website on tsp.gov, if you know your current account balance, you can project that to what would be in there, at least roughly what would be in there when you're ready to retire. And there's a calculator on there to convert that to a monthly payment. So you can kind of get an idea of how much monthly income you could safely withdraw from your TSP account on a regular basis. So there's three different places to go: Social Security, TSP.gov, and then your own agency's HR office to get an estimate of FERS. So there's really three different sources of income that you're going to have.
Okay, and I don't fall into this windfall, I'm reading, right?
No, because you're going to be under FERS. So your whole lifetime, whether you were in private industry or working in federal service, you've always paid into Social Security, so you don't have to worry about the windfall. You'll get the Social Security that you've earned.
Okay, how do I get in touch with you? Me and my wife need to really sit down.
You can get me through nitpinc.com, so nitpinc.com. Now, I don't do personal counseling, but I can refer you to a financial advisor if that's what you need.
Yeah, because I think she was getting ready to retire, and she changed her mind. A lot of people retire. Say they can't make it after retirement.
Well, that's why you got to be very careful. That's right.
Going to be my next question. Mike, it's really none of my business. I'm just going to make the comment. But if you go off to a second career, part-time, full-time, or whatever, one nice thing about the thrift is you don't have to touch it until 70 and a half. So if there was this income that isn't accounted for by what Tammy just went through, you might let that just percolate until 70 and a half.
And the other thing, too, is I'm not sure what agency you're with, but almost every federal agency offers some form of retirement seminar.
I work for Fort Belvoir Hospital.
For the hospitals. Yeah, so you might want to check with the HR there and see if there's a way for you to attend a pre-retirement seminar. And that way you can get some financial planning help that's included, the benefits overview, and even some information about life after retirement. So those retirement seminars offered at the agency level are generally very helpful, and it's a good starting place to make sure that you're ready to make that decision. It'll give you a little more confidence.
So you're saying don't do it, though?
Well, I'd say be careful, because from what you're telling me, it sounds like you may be jumping the gun just a little bit, but I don't know your whole picture, so you might have $1 million tucked away I don't know about.
No, but I won't own anybody any money, and I'll be free.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. But if you're living in Northern Virginia, it's going to take a lot to make those ends meet. So make sure you're ready.
And every year you work, you continue at the higher salary. You earn another 1% towards retirement. Life isn't all
TSP
bad
account.
On the job.
Yep.
Yeah, but federal government still don't get a raise now, I heard, right?
Well, not this year. Not this year. They're talking about 0.5% for 2013, so hang in there. might get another $20 a month.
Whatever it is, it's going to be more than the annuity.
Right. Well, this is a good show. I listen to this show every day, and I ask people to listen to it.
Thank you.
This is a beautiful show. They better not ever cancel this show.
Okay, then you can put it on your agency intranet, too. So anyway, thanks for calling.
Thanks
for being a fan.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
See you later.
All righty. Let's
yeah, that
do
was
it
a
again.
Good, that was a good call about, you know, what if I don't have a lot of service? You really got to look at that closely, because you know, he's going to be eligible to retire at 60. But can he afford it? That's a whole other question. That's something that's going to take some pen to paper and really make sure that he's making the right move.
And I don't think I want to sound high and mighty here myself. I look at it and I go, I don't think I'm ready financially.
Yeah.
And plus I really like what I do. So I mean, if you like what you do and you know, you can still do it.
Yeah, you know how much you spend every month, and you know how much it's going to take to live that lifestyle. You got to make sure you got the income, and you may or you may not. Just depends.
Okay. Next question. What's next? And don't forget about your life after retirement. When should I submit the application?
Mm-hmm.
Now we've kind of danced around this, but this is purely going to be zeroed in one group listening.
Right.
So when should I submit it?
Well, there's three applications, you know, depending on your age and depending on which retirement system. If we're talking about your federal retirement benefit, whether it be the civil service or the FERS annuity, that application, the application for immediate retirement, goes to your HR office usually 60 days before you separate. So if you knew you were going to leave the end of February, the end of March, it's not too early to put the application in at this point, or at least start filling it out, talking to your HR person, and getting that application ready to go. As far as Social Security goes, same difference. If you want to start receiving a Social Security check in the next 3 months, it's not too early to put your application in for Social Security, but you do that through socialsecurity.gov, not through your agency. And that would be for those people who are 62 or older. And as far as the Thrift Savings Plan goes, that would probably be your last application to send in. I sometimes say wait till the dust settles after you retire. See if you're going to go back to work. See if your income is going to be sufficient. Find out what that deficit is. How much monthly income do you really need from your thrift? and then make your withdrawal choice from the TSP. So wait at least 30 days to start withdrawing from the thrift. You could wait 5 years to start withdrawing from the thrift. You don't have to take that out just because you've left federal service. There is some tax rules, however.
Yeah, I was just going to, if you don't mind, march through this by quarters, mm-hmm. maybe. Generally, but not always, people feel compelled to go out at the end of the year for whatever reason. Certainly, if you have use, lose, leave, you're not bracked or whatever, end of the year would be good. But as your column annually says, every year isn't the same as prior. So you would want to seek out Tammy's column's advice about the best date to retire. And in reverse, if I'm not mistaken, you also talk about the best dates not to retire. And you give the warning sign end of the month of December, maybe not for this year. I'm not saying this year, 2012, or maybe not for 2nd or 3rd of January. Now, that's nice, and sometimes people that don't have used lose leave feel just as compelled to go out for whatever leave they do get. They, for whatever reason, feel that they're going to be in a lower tax bracket. Well, they may not be, depending on the size of their annuity and or if there's the Social Security. They may be in the same bracket. So if it's based on taxes, it's the wrong base to use anyway. So then maybe the end of March, early April, send them 3 more months on the job, 3 more. It could impact the high three. I mean, that's a remote. It could.
No, it would, because you'd have 3 more months at your current salary, taken away 3 months of your salary 3 years ago, which was lower than today.
Okay. Well, how would it affect the comp, the service comp?
Well, it'd give you 3 more months of service, yeah. too. So yeah. 3/12 of 1 year of your 1% of your high three.
So we're rolling the dice here, and we yeah. can't lose. Yeah. And if you really want to stuff a lot of money in the thrift, they have something called front load the thrift, where you can put the maximum in if you make that kind of money in 3 months. And you can do it all at once.
You have to do it by paycheck.
Mm-hmm. First, people need to be more sensitive than CSRSers with this, but most people don't have that kind of money to put all that in there. But if they cut out their federal and state income taxes, there's no reason to have federal and state taxes withheld from a salary that's not going to be taxable if it's all going into the thrift. So you can stuff a lot of money in.
Yeah, $22,500 this year.
Yeah. And then you move into June, you got the same issues as you did in March, but now we got 6 more months on the job and 6 more months of the higher comp and 6 more months to spread out that maximum thrift contribution to keep the taxes down, going to September, October, November. You got all these kind of things. And I'm not saying you should never retire, but if you're going to pick a year, maximize it within the year.
Right. Well, another thing I was thinking about for Mike, two things I was thinking about for him thinking of retiring in the next 2 years. As a way to get ready, you know, we're talking about the TSP and the fact that you can put in $22,500 this year. If he's not already doing that, try it. Up your TSP account to the maximum and see how much that hurts on a monthly basis as far as being able to still pay your bills and meet your monthly expenses. And of course, if it's too severe, you can cut back, but that's going to tell you right away that maybe it's not time to retire yet. So, you know, it'll do two things. It'll get you used to living on less, but it's also going to put more money away for when you do plan to retire, get you ready sooner. Then the other thing, too, is I said that, you know, your HR office may or may not have a retirement seminar. Some are better than others. You know, some are a half a day with a financial planner who's trying to sell his services. Another one might be a 3-day comprehensive seminar. So, you know, we do offer direct enrollment seminars. So if somebody does want to attend a 3-day retirement planning or a 2-day retirement planning seminar, we do offer those on our website that you can enroll separately from what the agency offers.
And if budgets are tight, we do mini seminars. We can do 3 hours. We could do 6 hours. We're going to probably stream video streaming in within 6 months or so, so that for those that are hit with budget issues, this might be the way to do it. Mm-hmm. And we have another caller.
Oh, good.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. I have a question about. I'm a federal employee, 27 years, and I've also Army Reservist and have done several tours, 6 months, a year, about 3 or 4 of those. Now, for computation of how much...
Uh-oh. What happened?
I mean, that's 27 years. But as far as my retirement, I got to buy back those times, right?
That's right.
So there's like 2 different ways of calculating that, I suppose, your longevity and how much actually counts for retirement when you retire.
Yeah, it sounds like because of your length of service, you're under FERS, right?
I'm under the new system.
Okay. All right. Yeah, the way to think about those military deposits is you're going to owe the in the times you were called up during your federal service, you're going to owe the lesser of 3% of your military base pay or whatever your contribution to FERS would have been on your civilian pay. It's the lesser of those two. But what that's going to be worth to you, for every year of active duty, that's going to add 1% of your high three onto your retirement. So I can almost never think of a time it's not worth paying that military deposit because that's not going to affect your reserve retirement. You'll still get your Title 10 retirement at age 60. But that is going to count those years or months of service towards your FERS benefit, which is always a better trade-off than what you owe. So I would say definitely look into paying those, and you'll get the advantage of paying the lesser of the civilian deposit versus the military deposit under the USERRA, the Uniform Services Rules that went into effect a few years ago.
Okay.
So check with your agency's HR office, and they can give you an estimate of how much that would be. And, you know, each one of those you can pay separately.
Okay. Every time I came back, they said, well, that's less than 12 months. You don't need to do anything. You still got the credit for duration being at the government, but I don't think they're talking about for retirement.
That's
they're just
right.
talking about longevity.
They're talking about leave. Yeah,
okay.
Unfortunately, yeah, depending on who you talk to, if you're not talking to a retirement specialist, they may not realize that to count that military service towards retirement does require a military deposit. Under FERS, the basic rule is no deposit, no credit. So you do want to talk to someone in your agency's HR office that specializes in retirement, have them review each of those periods to find out how much of that you're going to have to pay for and how much that deposit's going to be. I would assure you it's probably going to be worth your while.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, military services is one that there's it seems to be a lot of confusion out there on as far as whether it should be paid, not paid. But the basic rule under FERS is don't pay it, you can't count it. And so even though leave without pay normally counts for retirement without a deposit, if it's military service that you had your leave without pay, you have to pay for it. Otherwise, you'll lose that time.
It makes no sense not to pay for it.
Right? Yeah, but I think some of the advice out there is mixed, and people are starting to think maybe I don't have to pay it. Maybe it counts without a payment, but the rule is you do have to pay for it.
Do you also find that it's mixed because there are some type of redeposits that might not make that much difference? It might be better to sit on the money yourself. This
well,
is
that's
not
under
that.
The old system.
This is not that, right?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
No, under FERS, if somebody says you owe money, I generally
Listen.
Say pay it.
Okay.
Usually pay it. Under the old system, the rules are different. Like the woman that called earlier, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other if she pays for that 1981 service. But for FERS, you'll usually get a return on your investment within less than a year, maybe 2 or 3 years at most. And I think if you put money in the bank, you're not going to get a return on your investment for 100 years based on a 1% interest rate. So I think these deposits you owe for FERS are very good financial investments.
Okay, now as somebody gets closer to this, one of your questions here, is all the retirement paperwork that one would do and submit done electronically or is it manual?
Well, some agencies will allow you to submit your retirement application electronically, but that doesn't mean you don't have to sign it. So you can fill the thing out electronically. Normally, you're going to have to print it out, sign it somewhere along the line before you leave because there's a place on the application for your signature. And also there's a place on something called a summary of your federal service that you have to sign. And these forms are not submitted to OPM electronically. They're mailed to OPM. They're still processed manually. So you somewhere along the line, you're going to have to sign a form. Also, make sure that when you retire, you're also filling out or at least seeing paperwork that shows that your health and your life insurance is being transferred to OPM. Your agency is going to be responsible for transferring those valuable insurance benefits to OPM. So make sure you get a copy of the transfer of your coverage for health and life insurance as well. So not only your retirement application has to be signed, but make sure you also see proof that your health and life insurance has been transferred to OPM. So your agency should prepare for you a copy of your retirement application, give you an employee copy of your health insurance and life insurance conversion forms, and also notify you that if you carry federal dental and vision or long-term care insurance, a good backup plan is to contact BennyFeds.com for the dental and vision and LTCFeds.com for your long-term care insurance to make sure you don't have any gap in those coverages. Those you might have to pay direct deposit while you're waiting for your retirement to be finalized. So you not only want to make sure your FERS and SERS benefit gets to OPM, but also make sure your insurances follow you as well into retirement.
And if you talk about medical insurance, we run during open season pretty much every week through different insurance companies. Mm-hmm. And if I could remember each, I'd mention them, but I can't remember each, but they're great shows. But there's one in particular with Walt Francis who's really knows them all. And going into retirement, you know, I've learned this over the years, it doesn't stop one's ability during open season to change plans. That's and right. It might even be more sensitive to people when they do retire, like the one gentleman that called earlier. He's got a 23-year-old daughter. Well, after a while, that doesn't make any difference with health care. Mm-hmm. And right now it does, correct?
Right. Yes. As she gets older and as they get closer to retirement, they may want to make some changes to their health plan. The other time people want to change their health plan possibly is when they turn 65, because that's the age when you qualify for Medicare. And if you are retired and Medicare becomes your primary insurance, you may not be need to be in the same federal health plan you have been in for the last 30 years. You might be able to choose something less expensive and still have very good coverage between the combination of Medicare and your FEHB. But we could do that a whole separate show. And we have done that in the past, talking about Medicare and federal health insurance.
Sure. And just listening to them and people when they switch and what the guests included. And that's financially oriented as well as emotional as well as medical. Sometimes the financial is huge.
Yeah, I was reading something this morning on statistics on people's expenses at different age groups in their life. And they were showing from age 55 to 64, from 64 to 74, and then 75 and beyond. And you could guess which expense goes up when you're 75 and beyond, and that is healthcare. It represents a much larger percentage of your out-of-pocket expenses than what it would in your 50s. And the thing is, when you turn 65, you're still hopefully in relatively good health, so it's hard to envision that 10 years from now there could be some bigger expenses in that area. So Medicare and health insurance become very important things to think about as you move into retirement.
Okay, as well as the long-term care.
And long-term care as well.
All righty, 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. We're coming down to about 6.5 minutes, so let's take a look at who can I trust? I mean, this sounds like a TV show. I'm dating myself. But
I put that question in there because I think we put a lot of trust. And by rights, you probably should be able to trust your HR specialist. But keep in mind, the person you're dealing with at your agency, they may or may not have 20 years of experience. They might have just got that job last year, and it takes a while to really develop a lot of knowledge and a lot of information that you need to know to counsel an employee on retirement planning. So make sure that when you get that retirement printout, when you ask for a retirement estimate, be aware that it says estimate on it. The authority to take away the word estimate lies with OPM. So really look at that estimate to make sure they're using the correct amount of federal service that you've performed. If you owe a deposit, look on there to see how much it is that you have to pay. What happens if you don't pay it? Ask questions. Also ask for references. You know, if they answer a question for you and you're not sure that that's really what you thought the answer was going to be, can you, say, can you show me where it says that? Show me in the regulations. Because as I always say in my seminars, when I teach that full day of benefits, if there's anything that I say that you question or that you're not sure you heard me correctly, please email me and I'll give you a reference to where it says that in the regulation so that you know that, you can understand that and it applies to you. So, you certainly trust your agency that they're going to do their best to help you plan for retirement, but there's a limit and there is so much to know that it's very hard to be an expert on this. So you really want to ask good questions and make sure you feel confident that what your retirement is estimated is really what it's going to be.
And an example of that was the first caller. Sharp question, sharp lady.
Yep.
But VC, what's that?
Yep.
And a lot, now that's a dwindling breed that can qualify mm-hmm. for it because it's what, CSRS and CSRS offset?
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, it's just a huge benefit if somebody can avail themselves of it. And in her case, she had an option to do X or Y. And
yeah, and the other thing is, too, like you don't know what you don't know. Because I get people all the time that come to our seminars and they'll say, well, I thought I knew this stuff, but man, I learned four or five things today that I really didn't know. And so I do, as much as it sounds self-promoting, but I think attending a seminar, whether we're doing it or some other vendors doing it, I think it's a good place to start.
Are there other vendors?
No, unfortunately there are. But there's some good ones out there, including us. I think we're the best, of course.
Yes.
But that's a good place to get that information to really set yourself a checklist of here's the things I need to do to prepare to separate, to leave federal service, because you do want to take some responsibility for those decisions.
Okay, so we got who we can trust and who really cares if I'm going to get the retirement that I've earned.
That's right. You do. You're the one. You care that it's the correct amount, that it's exactly what it is. Because sometimes I've heard people, they get an estimate from the agency and then they get their first check from OPM and there's a discrepancy. There's a difference. And it's the OPM's calculation that really counts. So like it goes back to what I just said before, ask questions. If it doesn't look right to you, it may not look right to OPM. So make sure that you're getting credit for the service that you've all actually performed. Make sure that if there's service you've performed that's not listed on the estimate, ask why. Why didn't that count? There could be a reason why certain service doesn't count, but there might be a fact that maybe the service wasn't documented. Maybe you just didn't pay for it. So ask good questions because it's really you that cares that you're going to get the retirement that you've earned.
And go to one of our seminars, call us, and you can't get a wrong answer here.
Well, we'll give you the reference if we're not sure. I mean, we're not afraid to say we don't know, but having done this now for what, how many years we've been doing this? 25?
Well, we're 28, the 28 company.
Years.
Yeah. You and I think have been dancing together pretty close
about
to 25.
About 24 years, yeah. And I've been in this business for 30 years, so there's even still today things we don't know. That we have to look up, and things change on a daily basis. You know, what we say today could change tomorrow.
And what you do has always baffled me, and what I do often baffles me because tax finance changes weekly. All right, we've got 1 minute, and we're not going to get near the next question, what should I do with my TSP? But we will be back next week, although a holiday, a serious holiday, will be on air at the same time. Yeah. And we'll start off talking about what to do with the TSP. More importantly, what are the options with the TSP? You can't tell somebody what to do with the TSP, but you certainly
can give you some ideas of what you can do with
it. Here's how to maximize it, and here's how to get it, and here's how to do things that you might not otherwise think that you could do. So we're about ready to sign off. Final comments?
Just take responsibility, be prepared.
Be prepared, and the best way to be prepared is to go to one of our seminars, but if you can't, listen to the show.
That's right.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.